Welcome to the No One Fights Alone podcast. This podcast is dedicated to mental wellness for first responders and beyond. Through powerful stories, personal experiences, and expert insights, we explore the challenges and triumphs of maintaining resilience in the face of adversity. Together, we remind you, no one fights alone.
Welcome back to the No One Fights Alone podcast with Ben Pearson and Brad Shepherd, your co-hosts for today.
Morning,
Ben. How's it going in sunny Utah?
It's sunny, and we're almost officially spring, and there is hope. Hope once again that this weird hail snowstorms is about to wrap it up. So, yeah.
Well, I didn't get to come up skiing this year. I'm a little bit disappointed. There's just several reasons. But I was really looking forward to coming up this year and spending a few days in the Utah mountains skiing. I know you and your kiddos spend a lot of time. Matter of fact, don't you have a son that's
My son is a ski instructor, and which I thought would be a pretty sweet job until he explained to me that he literally skis uphill 30 times a day to pick up little kids who don't feel like doing it anymore. It's not quite as exotic as I thought it would be. I've got these old 80s movies in my head of ski bunnies and hanging out and all these really cool things. Yep, and he's just like, I'm working with 5-year-olds, sometimes 7-year-olds. And, you know, we're just going through the hand signals of I'm about to crap my pants.
He's living his rich, full life of his dream being destroyed by the reality of what work and labor really
is. He's hoping for all these ski days. It's going to be awesome. And he's probably had 5 or 6 days the whole year where he got to ski on his terms and go to places he'd like to go.
Yeah.
He rocks the magic carpet every day. And that's a great attitude.
Well, that's probably somebody's, you know, there's the ski daycare, probably, you know, put them in ski school and give them with your son of, you know, one of many across the United States ski areas that they're going to learn how to ski, but they're also going to keep my kid safe.
he just lives for tips. And sometimes, most of them, there's not any tips, but it's interesting. Looking what people are doing for $20 an hour in this country is a wide range of things. He's like, well, I could work at McDonald's for $20 or I could, you know, spend all day taking little kids to get hot chocolate. It's not the worst thing that could happen, but it's
but he's out there, he's out there doing it. He's working, he's showing up, he's being, you know, doing the labor thing, earning the dollar. Worst things could be done out there.
No, it's pretty fun.
Yeah. Well, I thought today we might talk a little bit about, just shoot the shit a little bit here for the listeners about some of your, I know there's a uniqueness about, you when you travel, when we go do different things here and there, it's really important to you. And I don't want to speak for you, but I'm speaking to my reflection of this, of when you go somewhere, you're always hitting me up about, hey, can you give me a ride along, when I go to this spot? And I just find that, encouraging one to, you know, the cultural competency piece of what you do at Chateau and wanting to stay current and relevant within, but no doubt there's been probably some opportunities to, see some things and be, you know, it's a peek behind the curtain, as it were, within our community of how things really going on. And, it's been said, it was said to me early on, and actually maybe worse now, but it was said to me early on that, law enforcement is 90% boredom and 10% terror. And I think a lot of your, ride alongs have been, you know, on the boring side, but, I don't know. I just want to, offer up a little bit of reflection of what some of those were. And I took a lot of guys riding with me, in various capacities, depending on, you know, who they were and what they were and what they were wanting to accomplish. And, but I know the most recent was, Well, before I unpack that, how do you feel about that? Let me just pause
that. Full disclosure for those who don't know, I'm not in law enforcement. The closest I've got to it is I've got some military in my family. I wouldn't know if I've even been adopted into the culture on any level, but I've been around it for a while, and we really strive to be as again culturally competent. But when I talk about ride-alongs, I have that in the same category of my head as going to a 12-step meeting. And 12-step meeting, if you've never been to one, it's a fascinating culture, and there is pretty incredible people that are telling some pretty incredible stories, and you learn a ton about yourself. You learn a ton about others. You learn to empathize and to connect. There's just so many cool things that are past the fluff of normal day-to-day chit-chat stuff that gets to happen in some of those two situations. And so as I think about ride-alongs, I put it right next to the 12 steps of everyone should do this. All of my kids have heard, like, hey, when you have a chance, some of my kids are younger, so they're not really in a spot for that. And I would encourage them not to go when they're 12. But everyone should do it. I no exceptions. Everyone should figure out how to get on a ride along, and everyone should show up to a 12-step meeting. And you will guarantee look at your life a little bit differently. You will look at the way the system works and doesn't work. But when it comes to mental health, all sorts of stuff. But those are two areas that stood out to me as incredibly cool, and I'll never be the same because of them. And I'm not in either one of them. But I am of the opinion that there's some pretty amazing miracles that happen when you get to visit these other little worlds, just like I imagine it would be for someone who goes and visits a different kind of country. You just start to look at and appreciate, and your worldview kind of shifts a little bit. So I don't know if that makes sense, but I'm a huge advocate of we all should get out of our butt and go and jump in some of these places and sit and watch for a minute.
Wow. I had not thought about putting those two together. That's really fascinating to think about those in the same context. But I see it. I see the point you're making in that, and see the correlation between the two. Being a part of both, I'm no longer an active member of the law enforcement community, but I am an active member of the 12-step recovery community. I see that correlation. Wow, what a fascinating connection you just made there. Well, I know my personal experience on the commission side of having ride-alongs, there were varied degrees of what kind of ride-along you were going to give them based upon who they mm-hmm. were. Were they a dignitary? Were they a professional? Right. Were they somebody aspiring to be a law enforcement officer or a firefighter or whatever for context of mine historically has been law enforcement. Are they wanting to be in law enforcement, and who are they? And I think the humorous side of this is most of yours have been pretty safe and tame, if not arguably boring.
Yeah. Is that fair? The personalities is one of the main attractions for me. There's so many different personalities. Part of what I like about, again, visiting a perspective other than my own is that it breaks all the stereotypes. I've had ride-alongs where it's a badass that just wanted to talk and tell me about how he thought the world worked, and we didn't go to any calls. In fact, we avoided all sorts of shit. I don't know if it was intentional, but I kept on seeing things. I'm in the front seat, right? And I'm seeing stuff show up on the monitor. I know things are happening, and we're like, hey, I'm going to show you this other part of the state.
Look over here.
And I'm like, okay. And in those moments, I've had to be like, all right, this guy needs something different. And he just wanted my input on a couple of things. And so this is us just having a long talk. And, And I would still say that was a great success. I learned a ton, and saw some beautiful places and appreciated different kind of communities I would never get to see. And again, you're right. There's an element of him being in the area, was providing support, comfort, whether that's on the civilian side or people on his crew. And, you know, I've been with a couple of different sergeants that are just like, you know, they're not trying to, you know, knock out as many calls as possible. They're not chasing that stuff. But I think those are still great moments that, and again, this guy's got, you know, in most cases, 10, 15, sometimes 20 years of doing all sorts of crazy stuff. And he didn't have to prove anything on that particular ride along that night. And I respect the hell out of it. So even those moments, and if someone does have those kind of moments, there's a massive appreciation of, you know, not all of it has to be this, you know, dopamine rush. But that is kind of what I thought it would be.
As a commander, I remember divvying out ride-alongs, and you know, it obviously empowered my lieutenants to, you know, to make those decisions however they saw fit. But many times I would give a nudge of, hey, make sure this one doesn't get into anything, or hey, make sure this one gets into as much shit as you can get them into. Then also there was an assumption of keeping them safe. You know, for the ride along. And I know you and I've talked about this offline, but for this point of this, just you and I talking, the ride along, it's somewhat of a burden to now, because you feel like I have just me to take care of. My partners will show up and they're going to take care. They have the same, you know, mindset, but now I have this human with me that I've got to make sure he or she is safe and doesn't, you know, go home with any holes in them. And, you know, also doesn't speak, you know, or get us in a lawsuit or, you know, and, you know, I remember taking people on ride alongs, and I knew, I was kind of a shit magnet. So when I worked the road, so I knew when they gave me a ride along, I knew what that meant. Like this means let's go get into something. And we generally did. We, you know, got in pursuits and got shot at and got, you know, got crazy, crazy wrestling matches. But they didn't give me ride-alongs very
often. Well, it's not like ride-alongs, like you'd mentioned, not like ride-alongs are bringing much to the table. If anything, they're a bumbling idiot who has no clue what's happening. And whatever instructions you do give them, there's a good chance they're not going to hear or know what to do with any of those instructions. And so that, I imagine, brings an extra level of stress to whatever the charge is and keeping them safe. They're like a toddler.
Well, I think the cool part. Oh, yeah. Well, I think the cool part would be, you know, what I'm curious to know what you learned, because, you know, most of us on this side of, we're immersed in the culture. So there's a lot of it. We assume it. And sometimes when you're that deep in it, you don't see some things. You just don't, it just is, and you don't see it. But, I would love to hear that perspective, but I'm also curious about if they know you're the clinical director of Chateau, how many of them thought you were analyzing them right off the bat? Oh, here I've got a clinician that I've got to give a fucking ride along with. And how many times did that happen?
It depends on the game of telephone. Usually there's two or three people involved in this ride along is about to happen, and the second or third down the line is the one that actually meets me. And so if they say, I don't know, he's just some dude from out of town, I'm liberated and I get to just be me. The challenge is that when people find out I'm anywhere in the mental health realm, and most folks don't know what treatment is or how it works. And in some cases, they have a friend that maybe went and got some help, but they still don't really know the story. They don't know where and why and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, if they know at all that I'm in mental health, I'm cursed. There's no objective ride along about to happen. The assumption this is true to my other life, well, the rest of my life, is people get very in their head about what they think I'm thinking. And so there's this, I'm being analyzed. It's closer to a meme of, you know, two different people in a marriage, and one person's considering all these deep, dark, insightful, really simple things. And I'm just trying to figure out where's the chips. And so I'm just happy to be there. But once they find out that I'm anywhere in mental health, they're just like, so what are you really thinking about me? And I'm like, I don't give two shits about what's going on in your personal life. I don't know. I just want to be here and soak it all in. That's not 100% true. I would say that's the majority of my experience of just like, I'm really just trying to figure out other people's world and just get out of my own assumptions. That's the majority of it. But there are times where I bring in this element of, I talk about suicide, stress, death, all this stuff, you know, many times a day. And so that's I'm always curious about how people are kind of managing the weight of their position, right? Especially first responders. That's just a big part of the world I live in. And so I am definitely looking at it from that lens of just like, how are you holding up? And for some people, they are eager to say, this is really tough. And there are other folks who, like we've talked about in other podcasts, there's the, I don't know you, and I'm going to keep to the rules. And the rules is you should never know any weakness about me. And so I think it's a bit of a mixture. And I think that most people, as soon as they realize I'm not doing a sales pitch, I'm not trying to figure out how to get them in treatment. The ever-present joke is, I wonder what the report you're going to write about me looks like. That is 100% the experience. You know, even when I tell them, like, I'm not working for anybody, I'm here because I want to be, I'm just curious about how things go, they never believe that. They always assume there's some kind of a, how crazy did you, you know, did you learn about my crazy today? And are you going to tell anybody? If they actually let down their guard a little bit. On my most recent ride along in Arizona, I was with two guys that were 5 years in, and they were given the instruction of like, find some stuff, rock his world, make this as uncomfortable as possible. And they told me right away, and I'm like, sweet, this is going to be great. And the usual curse kicks in, and if you're looking for it, you're not going to find it. So we had a couple of really interesting calls that we went on, and they were great. And you know, it's February and it's like sunny and beautiful and the windows are down and they got all sorts of loud music on and it's just heavy metal and just hanging out. And it was great. And so, you know, when we didn't have a call to go on, they'd try to find me as many homeless, you know, drug laden neighborhoods they could get me into. And, you know, I'm sure their personal goals was let's hopefully find someone that, as we're driving by, you know, they're going to drop their drawers and take a dump in front of Ben, hoping that there's a reaction on my part. But no, they're every single time, it ends up being just great people who have been doing a ton of things that they're never going to get thanked for, that other people just don't notice. And I think there's pretty cool moments that end up popping up, these little nuggets of hopefully them noticing that this pretty average person is in awe of how much cool things they bring to the job. And that's always been one of my bigger takeaways from these ride-alongs. It's just like incredibly cool people with very different backgrounds, but they all come together, connected with some of their values, and they showed up doing some pretty impressive work for their community. And it's often really misunderstood.
Well, and you obviously know this, but the, you know, suspicion is a baseline level for, you know, law enforcement. So, and most of the guys and gals out there working frontline law enforcement, their office is their unit or their car, and that's their a modest level of, you know, safe space. So now I've let somebody in here I don't know into my safe space, and, you know, suspicion abounds and grows, and you know, what's the chief asking about me? You know, there's no doubt those questions have come right off the bat. They're you're in my space, so I'm going to get in yours. You know, it's that.
Whatever it is you're looking for, I'm not going to give it to you.
Yeah. Well, I you know, I had, I think one of the funniest ride-alongs I had was when I was working the road, I had a district commander. His son wanted to be a trooper, and he did not want him going into law enforcement, which is pretty common for, you know, most cops. They're like, this is a great job, but I would not want my family in it. You know, there's some blue blood families out there that I love talking to. They're just, you know, it's in the blood. They're going to do it. They endorse it. But most families are like, this is unpleasant. I wouldn't wish this on my family. But he was 16, and his brother said, we worked out a deal to sneak him on a ride along. And next thing you know, we're in this enormous pursuit, ends up in a fight. And the whole time I'm thinking, he's going to fire me. He doesn't even know his son's with me. And, sure enough, he got locked in. I actually thought it might scare him off a little bit. You know, maybe there was an opportunity here for him to be scared. No, it all it did was embed completely, this is the life I want to live. And sure enough, he became a trooper. You know, years later, he became a trooper and a good one. But it was you take care of my brother, don't get him into anything, and okay, we won't. Sure. Same deal. It's the complete opposite, right? We're going to stay away from something, and sure enough, it just, here it is, and we're in a chase and a fight and are you okay? And that was fucking awesome, you know. Like, well, calm down. Like, don't tell your mom. All right. she'll kill me. Oh yeah. Well, I'm curious about maybe a more broader picture of, you know, kind of your insight in maybe what you saw from our culture did you have any like aha moments? Like, I didn't see that part, you know, all the training and all the conversations I've been in, any kind of revealing moments of like, oh, that makes sense. Or I didn't expect that part to be quite as burdensome, or any of those. I mean, maybe a broader picture of just the, you know, the culture itself. Any of those?
There's two that stand out. One is when I was in Colorado, we had a more eventful night, and we're bouncing off of different calls, and I was with a fire crew that night. And I remember I had so many moments that night where it was, regardless of what this call is, and there was some drama, but the way they talked about each of the calls and after the call was over, it was so studious. It was so educationally minded. I was really impressed with this crew that I got to hang out with, and it was, everything was about learning. Everything was about improving their education and sharpening their skills. And I know that not all crews are like that, but boy, that was an impressive one, where it was, you know, we went from how do you disable an alarm in a golf club to some other little medical thing here, and jump over to the county jail because someone intentionally swallowed a pencil. Like, we were kind of just doing all sorts of stuff. And, but I was incredibly impressed by how much it was, all of this is making me better. That the uglier, the nastier, who on the team gets to do it, who hasn't had a chance to learn and improve this particular skill yet. That blew my mind. I'm like, does anyone in our culture realize if we talked and thought like this more often about how how we just get so much more shit done, and how we could really improve ourselves and people that we're with and the teams we work with. But that was incredibly cool to be around a team that just was thinking that way and talking that way. And yeah, they were incredibly impressive. So that was one crew that was just like, wow, this is, they know their stuff. And regardless, they just had a mindset that was self-improvement. And that was all it was. It wasn't any bitching and complaining and who is this idiot who's trying to swallow a pencil. It wasn't any of that. It was just, because I know there's an element of the culture in all of our cultures, especially in the service community, where there is this jaded, kind of tired, and I'm responding to the next idiot. There's a lot of empathy in that. There's a lot of exhausting things that kind of wear people out. But that was a group that had that choice, and man, they didn't do it. They didn't go down that route, and they had their captain just kept the conversation incredibly professional. And that one, I was thinking about that for weeks of just like, holy cow, how am I as a leader? What kind of tone do I set when I walk into a room? But boy, that one blew me away. So that was one. The other one that stood out was, as I've mentioned to you a couple of different times, my ride along in South Central LA. And that one was powerful. Even though I was in a town that was notorious for violence, notorious for being incredibly rough, we were there during a holiday, and we thought, "Hey, this is going to be it. This is the one I've been waiting for." Right? And as expected, nothing happened. But, and I've told you this before, but riding along in that particular community, I just learned a ton about hate. And the riding along at 25 miles an hour with the windows down, looking the way I look, and being in the car that I was in, nonstop daggers, nonstop of anger, betrayal, frustration, and that gave me a lot of pause and made me stop and consider, 4 or 5 hours was just like, holy shit. Like, there, how do you thrive in the conditions that are this hostile? I mean, you are there to jump in front of a train and stop pain in a community that anything you do will be interpreted as a betrayal or
wrong.
You're doing it wrong or bad, or there's this. That one stood out to me as, for one, again, how does this crew continue to be incredibly positive, very mature, very professional, and even when there was this option to kind of sneer back and, you know, give the middle finger, not with your finger, but probably with your scowl and some other nonverbals. But there was this incredibly powerful young woman, not one woman, but, you know, very smart, very strong Latina officer that was kind of walking me through stuff. And she was constantly professional and didn't get bought into any of the little tricks or any of the little drama or anyone baiting her to be reactive or whatever. But wow, I mean, I was just impressed. It was, I learned a ton about, for one, our culture, and just about how much damage happens in the media to great people in this world, in the law enforcement community, especially in these last 5 or 6 years. But yeah, that one stood out as, yeah, there's so much more to people, and yeah, it's really, really tough. And I just admired that whole crew.
Well, I think both of those points you bring up are absolutely fascinating. If I were to actually comment on one or maybe even both, I've often said that this career leaves no gray area on who supports you and who hates you. There's not a gray. You know right off the bat. And in that, the spirit of that, I think oftentimes law enforcement, and I've seen this, law enforcement officers, men and women in this community, if you buy into that hate or that negative too much, you'll start to see everyone against you. Like you'll see. So, and when I teach that, I tell folks all the time, in order to stay balanced, you have to intentionally go find the people and interact. I think we did that more in the old days about going and working the streets, you know, and city police officers would become more common to them of, because they were door checking and, you know, walking a beat. And, I don't think you necessarily do that. Most cities don't do that quite as much, but I mean, that's old days, but you know, it was interacting with the public. They, you know, they call it community policing now of, you know, going out and being positive, but, most of those are a specified unit of interacting with the public. So some of those, like the guys you were with in Arizona, I mean, those guys are night shift guys. They're in the dungeons. They're in the, so if they're not, you know, I'm not pretending to know what their, you know, their day-to-day life looks like, but I would be bold enough to say if they weren't intentional about seeking out the friends of law enforcement and these positive interactions, it begins to be all negative. It begins to be, and then this belief structure starts to arise of, well, everybody hates me and everybody's against me and there are no positive people. And, you know, you've surely seen that within, you know, some of the clients at Chateau of getting there and say, you know, nobody appreciates what I do, and that everyone's against me, and there are no police supporters, you know, and I just find that both of those points very glaring to the, well, if I circle back to the first one, what a testament to being a good leader out here of just, and you don't have to be a commander or a captain or a boss or a chief. You can be that in your own home of, hey, we're going to, this is how we're going to do and play and act and be, and, you know, educational and learn from it. And the spirit of what I put down is going to be this environment. I think it's fascinating. Great. Well, great.
Points. One last shout great out points. To this awesome lady that I was with in LA, as I commented and say, like, wow. I mean, we're a few hours into it, and just like, how do you deal with this? Like, there's one coffee shop in the whole area where you actually can get something you think is not contaminated. How do you deal with that? And she was great speaking to your point about saying some of these people have been hurt and some of them have a point. That they really have felt betrayed, and there really is some validity to why they're looking at us like that. And I know that it's not about me. I know that that something bigger has happened. There's something bigger I don't completely understand, but I know that it's real. And anyway, I was just really blown away by the idea of, I don't have to take it personally, but they can be hurt and they can still give me that look. And it doesn't have to be about me, and I can give them the next experience that'll be a little bit more positive, regardless of what's kind of going down. They're gonna meet a better experience than the previous one, and that was the long game that she talked about. And anyway, it was just incredibly cool. And I know there's loads of folks that do that all the time that just never get credit for it.
Well, I think within the spirit of this, and we're talking about cops because we're talking about your ride along, but this spans more than just the law enforcement culture. There's a spirit within this that we're talking about of you know, veterans and first responders and emergency room, emergency medical, that there's such a carryover. That's the reason they're called first responders and veterans, that they're, albeit their disciplines are unique, those cohort groups are very, very similar. So I know we're talking about law enforcement, but, the challenges, and the carrying out and execution of their duties and the implications of it are very, very similar. Law enforcement just seems to be the most hated of those groups oftentimes and most challenging. Well, arguably, hated, disliked, misunderstood, right? But as you were sitting here talking, it made me think about the Paul Harvey commentary. And I really want to kind of close it out with this, with your permission. I just want to kind of wrap this up. And for those of you, if you've never heard this, I'm going to read it because I just love this. And this was 50 years ago. I looked it up real quick. I don't see a date on it. But this is, I'm giving the nod completely to Paul Harvey. This is, we're not plagiarizing this, but I'm gonna close this out. Just read this script. A policeman is a composite of what all men are, mingling of a saint and a sinner, dust and deity. What that really means is that they are exceptional. They are unusual. They are not commonplace. Buried under the froth is the fact. And the fact is less than 0.5% of policemen misfit the uniform. And that is better average than you would find among clergymen. What is a policeman? He is, of all men, is at once the most needed and the most wanted. A strangely nameless creature who is sir to his face and pig or worse to his back. He must be such a diplomat that he can settle differences between individuals so that each will think he won. But if the policeman is neat, he is conceited. If he's careless, he's a bum. If he's pleasant, he's a flirt. If he's not, he's a grouch. He must make instant decisions, which would require months for a lawyer. But if he hurries, he's careless. If he's deliberate, he's lazy. He must be first to an accident, infallible with a diagnosis. He must be able to start breathing, stop bleeding the splints, and above all, be sure the victim goes home without a limp. The police officer must know every gun, draw on the run, and hit where it doesn't hurt. He must be able to whip two men twice his size and half his age without damaging his uniform. And without being brutal. If you hit him, he's a coward. If he hits you, he's a bully. The policeman from a single human hair must be able to describe the crime, the weapon, the criminal, and to tell you where the criminal is hiding. But if he catches the criminal, he's lucky. If he doesn't, he's a dunce. He runs files and writes reports until his eyes ache to build a case against some felon who will get dealed out by a shameless Seamus. The policeman must be a minister, a social worker, a diplomat, a tough guy, and a gentleman. And of course, he'll have to be a genius, for he'll have to feed a family on a policeman's salary.
Wow. And that's the rest of the story. Awesome?
That's the rest of the story. For those of you that don't know Paul Harvey's rest of the story, look it up. He's one of the most fascinating guys of our society. I think that's a great place to close. Yep,
that's great. Thanks for sharing that. That's awesome. I've never heard it. That's great.
Great visit, Ben. We'll see you soon.
Thanks a ton. See you, man.
Y'all be safe out there.
Chateau Health and Wellness is a 16-bed treatment facility nestled in the foothills of the Wasatch Mountains in Midway, Utah. Chateau's First Responder Resiliency Program is designed to treat the unique challenges and issues that first responders encounter in the course of their careers. Chateau's comprehensive and highly individualized approach to treatment addresses more than just the presenting issues. It addresses the why. Each of their seasoned, trauma-trained, and culturally competent therapists utilize evidence-based, specialized therapies to treat trauma at its core and enable clients to begin the healing process while developing a resilient and healthy relationship with stress. Chateau Health and Wellness is trusted by departments and agencies from around the country to treat responders and veterans. In fact, it is one of only a handful of facilities nationwide that is vetted and approved to treat members of the Fraternal Order of Police. For more information or to speak to a representative, go to chateaurecovery.com or call 888-507-5031.